Hello and welcome to episode 2 of The Watcher. I'm Connor and this is Fen.
Hello.
What are we talking about today?
Oh, Reagan.
Oh, fuck yeah. Reagan. Yeah, we are talking about Reagan. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, St. Reagan. That's what I always like to say. Uh-huh. Because for some reason there's this worship of Reagan and his policies and his words from going on 40 years ago now, and It's unreal. It's this party of Republicans can't seem to come up with any new ideas because they're stuck with this guy Reagan. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I know because this, you know, he was a very Christian seeming man. I'm sure that he was probably pretty devout in his personal life, but you know, he came across to the evangelicals really well, and he was really, truly was a gifted communicator. I mean, some of the things Reagan says are still used, Reagan said are still used today, you know. But, I mean, it was all a sham. I mean, kind of like Trump. No, I mean, he wasn't crazy like Trump. He at least had some sort of, you know, sense of cooperation with other nations. But generally speaking, you know, he was about as empty as Trump was.
He's a huckster, right?
He was a huckster, yeah. Yeah, absolutely he was. I mean, so like this guy in the 1940s, he can't qualify to go to war. He's got some sort of medical issue. I don't remember exactly what it was, but he can't qualify to go to the war, right? But he wants to put his 2 cents in. He wants to help out with the effort. So he's Californian. So he decides that he's going to, he ends up with a gig doing like war propaganda films. And you can go find them. You know, they're easy. They're on YouTube. And I say propaganda because they generally kind of were, you know, I mean, I appreciate the war effort and all that, but they were not entirely honest in their content, I guess, maybe, would be the best way of putting it. Does that seem fair?
Yeah. Propaganda is still propaganda, even if it's made by the side that we agree with.
Right, yeah, exactly, you know, and, you know, I mean, that's where I feel that that's probably where Ronnie learned the power of communication was in that kind of, because he was, you know, he was in the military. He just worked, you know, in their propaganda shop. And That's where he learned to really communicate, in my opinion. Got out of that, and, you know, then he went to GE, which was corporate propaganda, basically.
Right.
And he was a spokesman for them for a few years, I think. Then ran for office, successfully and unsuccessfully varying times. But eventually became the governor of California. And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that some of our older listeners remember this, but I know that none of our younger listeners will, because nobody ever talks about it. It's insane that nobody ever talks about it, because to me, it was the biggest sign of what an intractable anti-government person Ronald Reagan really was. Because at the time he became governor, college in California was free. It was a free higher public education system. You know, California being ahead, they were ahead of the world on that one. And and he just took office and killed it. Just killed it. It was, I don't know, government giveaway or something ridiculous like that. Who knows?
That is messed up. No, I definitely wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he robbed millions and millions and millions of Americans of a free education. Think about all the, I mean, okay, so what happens in California generally ends up happening in the nation. They do things first, generally. I know that New York, you know, they do a lot, they have a lot of things that happen, but it's mostly like financial stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. Or business stuff, usually, you know, comes out of like the East Coast. As far as like innovations in the way our government operates, there's more of that coming out of the East Coast. But for some of your more liberal initiatives, you know, California usually leads the way. And what they do, because, you know, they're the sixth largest economy on the planet, the rest of the nation ends up doing. And had Ronnie not done that, I mean, we could all in this country be enjoying a free college education by now. Because they would have found a way to make it work.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, we have Ronnie to thank for that. And every time, you know, some guy like Bernie Sanders says, oh, everybody deserves free college, I think to myself, yeah. They do, and, you know, Ronnie killed it. Same Reagan.
That's crazy. One of the things that, my homeland of Ireland, one of the things that sort of pulled us out of everything being terrible all the time, which to varying degrees is always happening in Ireland, was a couple of generations of free third level education.
Right. I mean, it changes the nation.
Yeah.
That's a great example, too. It changes the nation. So he does his governorship, and he tries to run for president unsuccessfully. In the 70s, I think maybe it was against Ford. I'm not absolutely sure. That sounds right. Carter wins his terms, and Carter was a liberal, definitely an unabashed liberal, and he was a Southern Baptist too. You know, like he was one of the, like the last generation of Southern Baptists in this country that, you know, really kind of took the Bible to its good side. You know, I don't feel that as much coming from the Southern Baptist denomination anymore.
It's hard to imagine a Jimmy Carter style liberal now. I mean, I'm sure exists,
it really is, yeah.
But, yeah.
I think that the great realignment of North to South, the realignment, I guess you could say, of, you know, after the Southern strategy, after Nixon's Southern strategy, I think that ended Southern. That was the beginning of the end for Southern Democrats, really, like of that we might see as a Democrat today.
Yeah.
Although I feel like maybe that's changing. There's been some real promising results in the last election. The fact that Stacey Abrams came as close as she did, and Beto, you know, came as close as they did, that's pretty unheard of. That's a sign of trouble for the Republicans.
Yeah.
If they start losing other states, they're in real trouble. Anyway, so Carter, I mean, he wanted to do the metric system. I mean, I was too young to really know what that was all about at the time. It seems to me probably business kiboshed that, which makes sense. I mean, they didn't want to change everything they were doing already, and they may end up having to do it anyway now that it's gone global.
Yeah.
But he did another thing, which, you know, I always thought was really cool. He put solar panels on top of the White House. Jimmy Carter put solar panels on top of the White House and was working towards making the White House completely green.
That is so cool.
First thing Ronnie did was take him down.
For that alone.
Hey, work for GE, man. What do you expect, right?
Yeah.
GE, it was 3 or 4 years. No, it was more. I think 6 or 7 years ago, GE actually had a tax bill with the United States government that the government ended up owing them money. GE.
That's so horrible.
And that goes back to, like, you know, I was talking about how, like, the lawyers got too good. Well, it's the same thing. The lawyers, the accountants, you know, they lobby in for the, you know, they lobby in for the breaks that they want. And then the accountants use those breaks to make sure that the government owes GE money for some odd damn reason. I think I probably paid my 23% that year, you know?
Yeah. That's insane.
So, yeah, well, you know, profits, I guess. That's a whole other thing. I was talking to one of our friends, you're my mutual friends, the other day. I'm not going to use names here because, you know. But we were just talking about how, and, you know, funny thing is, Ronnie, the great communicator, was a master at playing this game of that myth of American individualism that everything happens you did on your own in America, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And Ronnie was perfect at that with his cowboy hat and his ranch that he never worked. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, Ronnie, when he came into office, he did it on the backs of, quote, welfare queens, end quote. I think that Ronald Reagan did more to break the American people's trust in our government than any president ever, except for maybe Trump now, you know, but even some terrible presidents didn't say the thing that Ronnie loved to say. And it's one of the most famous things one of the things he's most famous for is he was making a speech about how the government was too big and it was too bloated, classic conservative stuff, you know. Fiscal conservative stuff. And at one point he says, it's the worst words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
Yeah, you remember that now, right?
Yeah. I mean, that really strikes a chord with me when you say that no one broke trust more. Because when I think of, say, something like Trump, right? As much as he has destroyed norms, there's still, I think people are very split on Trump, and a majority of people are like, "Hey, this guy's crazy," and then there's, this minority, this powerful minority. Whereas with
38%
Reagan,
current.
sorry,
38% currently.
right,
Just adding that in there. Go ahead. Sorry.
yeah, but whereas with Reagan, it feels like, I mean, just as an outsider watching American films in the 80s and stuff like that, it feels like Reagan had more, he had more cultural influence and was
He
more
did.
insidious.
He did. And I would say a lot of it was, actually, I had a political science teacher years ago. I've taken a few courses in political science, and he one of his theories has always been that Americans backlash against presidents that they just had,
Right.
which was kind of what scared me when Trump ran, because I've always felt like that was a really true statement. If you look back in history, 20th century at the very least, every time we elect a particular president, and if he does four term, if he does two terms, we always elect almost the exact opposite for the next term.
Right.
It couldn't have worked out more grand this time, and I don't mean grand in a good way. But I think that there were tough times during the Carter presidency. We had the Iran hostage thing where we lost a whole sealed Delta Force team, in the desert, and that was when terrorism really, really, really started to pick up worldwide, and everybody was scared, and they didn't really feel like Carter was a stabilizing influence because his White House was pretty chaotic. He wasn't a very good leader, And I think that Ron took advantage of that, naturally so. And I think part of his rugged individualism and his folksy style and the fact that at the time he was the oldest president we have ever elected, I think that America was looking for more of a father figure at the time. That's what that professor thought, and I tend to agree with that statement. That one of the reasons he had the magic to be elected so overwhelmingly was because we were still coming off the Vietnam War. The 70s were not good. That's when wages started to fall. And Ronnie just was the kind of the perfect guy at the perfect time, really. I mean, if that's what you wanted in a president, I was too young to vote at the time. But I mean, I was a punk rock kid in the 80s, man, and we had, anti-Reagan stuff all over, t-shirts that was, crossed out the eyes of Reagan and stuff like that. We hated him. We hated him. Because he represented the grandfather that we didn't like, The guy that told you to cut your mohawk. He was square, and Nancy was too. And I don't know if you know, but Nancy was Ronnie's second wife.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Nancy was Ronnie's second wife. Ronnie was divorced. And I do think that Ronnie had a huge hand in breaking America, maybe the final straw, but he definitely rolled us over the cliff to America came to this point where we just didn't trust our government anymore. I remember when I was a kid. Well, not when I was a kid. When I was in college, I took a American popular culture course, one of my favorite courses ever. And one thing they had talked about was generational studies. And my generation, Generation X, is the first generation to grow up knowing from this is actually a scholarly statement from the people that wrote this book, was that my generation was the first generation to grow up knowing you couldn't trust the government. Because we grew up knowing about Watergate. As long as I can remember, I've known about Watergate. But everyone before me, they didn't have that kind of thing. Like this Trump stuff, I mean, like, what's just Nixon too, And that's kind of sad that an entire generation grew up not trusting the government. And I think Ronnie took advantage of that. Or he felt it himself and just brought those feelings to the fore for everyone else.
It's so funny how, Ronnie and then later Trump use the don't trust the government narrative to gain power in government and then to wield power in government. That's such a weird sucker punch.
Actually, I think that it's funny you should call it that. I think the entire conservative movement, what they call movement conservatism within the Republican Party itself, and I'm including a lot of the higher thinkers like Bill Kristol and well, David French, he always comes to mind, but and even some of the guys that are never Trumpers now, like Max Boot or Rick, well, I can't remember his name, the one that tweets a lot, Rick Wilson, I want to say maybe.
Okay.
A lot of these guys, the conservative political philosophy starts with government can easily become bad. It starts with that,
Right.
which I see. I mean, it stems from a revolt against imperialism, you know. But I think that it's metastasized into government is always bad when a guy like Reagan, who's, you know, Saint Reagan, says, I'm here from the government to help, and I'm here to help, are the dirtiest words ever spoken. You end up with an entire party full of people who despise the government that they want to run.
Right.
So they, because of Ronnie, they put poison pills in it. They de-staff agencies. Like at one point, and it might be true now, but I remember reading years ago that the FDA had about 8% of the actual agents it needed to do its work on farms alone.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, they purposely understaff it so that it can't do the job that it's supposed to do. And then tell you that your government is broken.
Right.
So we need to put less money into it, so let's lower taxes for rich people.
Which is all pretty familiar, based on what's happening right now. It's just happening writ large at the moment.
Right. And even though Saint Reagan raised taxes three, count them, three times, because he was a bipartisan worker, they refuse to acknowledge that. If you tell that to someone who is a quote conservative or maybe a Republican-based voter might be a better example, they'll tell you, they'll say that's a lie. No, actually, Reagan did raise taxes. That's how he paid for his, are you ready for this? 30% increase in the military budget. That's the largest increase in our military budget in the history of our country, except for the Civil War and World War II.
30%.
30%, dude. 30% increase in budget. And here's a fun little side story. This will blow your freaking mind. At the time, Dick Cheney had a group, and I believe it was called the C Project. That might not be absolutely correct. But it was a it was one of these wonderful think tanks, you know, and they were making things up that the Soviets were doing to increase the military budget. For example, have you ever seen The Hunt for Red October?
Yeah.
Okay, so that sonar proof, totally silent sub that the Russians had in that. You know what I'm talking about?
Sure, of course I do.
Yeah. Okay, well, that book, Clancy's book, is based on some papers that Cheney and his boys, to include Rumsfeld, by the way, always involved in the nefarious military things. These guys cooked up a fake sonar proof Soviet sub so that they could increase our sub budget. And proposed it, you know, proposed it as a real proposal. This is what the Soviets are doing when they really weren't. And everybody in the intelligence community knew they couldn't do that, but they still went ahead and projected that as a reality.
That is wild.
And that's how. And now think for 5 minutes, though. This is the guy. These are the guys that call themselves smaller government conservatives.
Right.
So, I mean, which is it? What is it with these Ronald Reagan types? Which is it? You know, is it what it is really? Is that as long as it helps their boys in a business, well, it's all about, you know, liberalism, I guess, if they would call it that. That's not appropriate. It's all about big government for them if it helps a business.
Right.
You know, hence the big tax breaks, you know. Well, that's just welfare for business. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
GE owing money, GE being owed money by our government to it is corporate welfare.
Yeah.
It's just that simple, you know? And we know what they're supposed to be creating these jobs, but they're not. Everybody that owns shares in GE got an extra $50 per share that year because of it. And maybe bought a fur coat.
It blows my mind. Like Amazon, $1 trillion company, getting enormous handouts, to put its headquarters somewhere. Well, two places actually. Like
Your headquarters. What is that?
they were gonna put them somewhere anyway. Just let them put them where they're gonna put them because they'll bleed you dry. It's crazy.
It's ridiculous. It's like the sports arenas when they when an owner comes in and they're like and the league comes in and we want to build a new arena, right? So they get all the tax. They get the legislature just like, oh yeah, we'll give you all these tax breaks and you don't have to give us any taxes until X amount of time. They'll get tax breaks. Breaks on the front end of it to build it, then they'll get tax breaks on the profits that they make off it, supposedly creating jobs when really they only create 200 minimum wage jobs of hot dog slingers and ticket counters. And every single time, every time, it hurts the state that they do it in. Every time they lose money in perpetuity, they never end up making money off this stuff.
That's crazy.
No, it's not crazy. It's bought and sold for government. It's a bought and paid for government. That's what it is. When we talk about those lobbyists, they go in and, it's a former legislator, Joe Blow from, and yeah, I use guy names all the time because it's even more obscene that it's all guys doing this. It's not representative of my nation. My nation's 52% women. Anyway, Reagan, right?
Fuck Reagan.
Fuck Reagan indeed. So what else about Ronnie? That's oh, so this is the thing that you and I are gonna get deep into the weeds sometime. I don't it may be like the most popular unpopular episode we ever do, but I really do want to spend some time talking about the unitary executive theory. I think we've mentioned it before.
Go on. What's that?
Well, in a nutshell, and you know what's funny? Here we go with Cheney again, because this is really Cheney's idea after Nixon. A lot of conservative Republicans thought that the government, because they're conservatives and the government shouldn't be able to do what it did, which is the most counterintuitive thing I've ever heard, because it was another, okay, unitary executive some other time. They thought that Congress was too hard on the pre on Nixon. They thought that overstepped its boundaries in doing what it did to Nixon, which is insanity to me, but that's what Cheney and his boys thought, Remember, they all worked for Nixon and Ford and everything. I think that's one of the reasons actually that Ford pardoned Nixon rather, he said he did it for, national unity or whatever, but I think he did it because he believed in a unitary executive. The unitary executive theory is that the president should be able to do pretty much whatever he wants, and that Congress really shouldn't have a say in it, which is one of the most anti-constitutional things I've ever heard.
Well, that's imperial. That's royal.
Yeah, that's a king, I mean, it's just that simple. That's a king, And we don't do that here. We don't do that here. We're dangerously close to it here right now, and that's what worries me all the time, is because we don't do that here, Like, I always felt bad for Canada because for the longest time they had the Queen's Scepter in the middle of their parliament, and it just was like this reminder that, yeah, they still do kings and queens. And they don't have that anymore, and good for them. And that country was well run, in that system too. So I'm not in any way ripping on Canada. I love Canada. It's one of my favorite places in the world. Great people, great times. Very liberal place, generally speaking, as far as like how you can be free and be yourself. It's smart, They like education up there, generally speaking. I mean, like everywhere else, there's places that don't.
Yeah. But Canadians, generally speaking, pretty well informed. It's a well-informed populace.
Yeah, they really are. They really are. It's funny, actually, one of my favorite old Cartoon Network shows was O Canada, because they make amazing cartoons out of Canada.
Oh, okay. I never saw
Yeah,
that.
really art house good stuff, man. So we were talking about Reagan and unitary executive, and
Yes.
by the time Reagan comes into office, we've had these. I know, right? That's crazy. I got back to that. So, so by the time Reagan comes into office, these guys have had a lot of time to brew this unitary executive theory. They had a little bit of the Ford years and some Carter time, but they're in this place where The same people, man, the same people are in the government. Reagan comes in, the same people are there. It's this cycle in. They cycle them out for a little while, and then when they take power, all the same people gravitate towards the White House, and because they have experience, they get right back in. But that's kind of politics. I mean, that's to be understood, and that's a little bit of the nature of the two-party system. The only problem is, in Republican Party, you can fail up. Whereas in the Democratic Party, if you fail, you usually end up gone, you know? Yeah. But the Republican Party is so tight-knit that if you are a total fuck-up, for some reason you get promoted, like this guy Whitaker, you know? Total fuck-up. Yeah, now he's the AG. Acting AG, whatever.
Yeah.
So Reagan comes into office, and he's got his unitary executive theory, you know, and all the boys that back it around him. And the Iran-Contra deal comes around. Now, are you familiar with the details of that I can give you without taking too much time?
No, only brush strokes, really.
In a nutshell, Reagan had ordered his... Okay, the pre-story to that is that Congress had passed an act that said that the commander-in-chief was not allowed to engage in combat activities outside of the, well, at all, without Congress's approval, because there was always war, you know. But then president, you know, like Korea was a police action, and Vietnam, you know what I mean, like they started trying to find these legal workarounds, because, you know, good lawyers. And Congress passed an act that this might have been before Romney, but maybe at the very early of his term, I don't remember exactly. But Congress did pass an act that constrained Ronnie from being able to engage in combat activities outside of congressional approval. And it didn't mean that he had to declare war. It just meant that he could engage in a combat activity, but he had to report it back to Congress within X amount of days. That law still holds. And what is supposed to happen is that the chief executive, will say to Congress, we're in country X, and we're there because I think this has to do with our national security, and I'd like permission to keep doing that. Well, Congress lost a lot of its political will, too, and those who have power don't give it up easily. Fair statement?
Yes. Yeah.
And the thing that always concerned me the most about the unitary executive was that as it becomes more and more inserted as a valid political theory, a president will leave that extra power to the next president. And it doesn't matter that that president agreed with him on X or Y, that president is not going to give up that power. And as unpopular as what I'm about to say is, Obama was really good at that. And what worried me when Trump took power was that Obama had, because he had an intransigent, is that the right word? Intransigent Congress? That'd be the right word, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 50-cent word day. And yay. And because he did, he had to do all these executive orders. And I appreciate that he felt he had to do them, but they made me uncomfortable because that was just more unitary executive.
That's interesting.
And I love Obama. I think that really he is going to go down as one of the best presidents this country's had. And that's just the truth of it. I really do. I think healthcare alone got him his place in history. Yeah. Not to mention, you know, like crying over Newtown. I mean, geez, they were playing that the other day, and I started crying again.
So, like a human being. It's so crazy to see a human being in that position.
It's crazy now, but it wasn't crazy before, you know? We expected that. Now we got a guy who throws on his camouflage MAGA hat and tries to sell him while he's standing in burned forest, you know? Hawking his wares like a freaking huckster. Anyway, so Reagan, the Iran-Contra thing in a nutshell was that Reagan had been told by Congress that he had to stop operating in a particular area of South America. Congress didn't agree with what he was doing. I think it was Central America. He was sending in special forces troops to train Contra communists in maybe Honduras. I don't remember exactly. El Salvador, maybe. But somewhere in Central America. Because there was a communism movement growing there, and there still is a communism movement growing there. We've done absolutely no good with that. As a matter of fact, we might have caused more harm. Well, what Reagan decided to do was, rather than actually send troops, he had Oliver North sell Sidewinder missiles, handheld ground-to-air anti-aircraft missiles. He had Oliver North arrange with the CIA to sell those missiles to Iran so that he could funnel that money to the Contras rather than actually sending troops.
Right. That's the part. That's the thumbnail that I would have remembered if I was asked. Just that tiny part.
Yeah, it's enormously complex, actually, and I may have that detail wrong because it is enormously complex what happened. It was a classic bureaucratic hiding of the bad guy, you know? And really, Ronnie was the bad guy. I mean, this was his decision. He was told he could do this. He knew he couldn't do it, and he made this decision to do it anyway. And then threw Ollie North under the bus, saying, I didn't know anything about it. That was all those guys.
Yeah.
And at the time, nobody knew because it wasn't open secret. But, I mean, now, I mean, everybody knows that Ronnie signed those papers, man. Well, by the time Congress started to come on to him about it, you know, he was actually starting to lose his. He was starting to hit the senility, you know.
Yeah.
And Nancy was doing a lot of the day-to-day stuff, and Ronnie just, he wasn't all there. And it's weird, if you pay close attention to the way Ronnie was, like even in his speeches when he was reading off the teleprompters and stuff, it started to get, like, the more senile he got, the more folksy he got.
Really?
Yeah, just like, I don't know. I mean, it's hard. That's really the only way I can explain it. Like, he just got more folksy. It was more grandpa-like. It was more, oh, that guy's totally trustworthy, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe because he didn't have the guilt of what he was saying behind him anymore. I don't know.
Wow, that's a thought.
Well, you know, the weirder thought is when you think about it, there was a guy who was going senile in charge of world destruction.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, he had his finger on the button, and he was deathly afraid that the communists were going to, you know, were going to attack. Although, I got to say, there's one thing I will always say in defense of Ronald Reagan. Even though a 30% budget is crazy for the military increase, man, he bankrupted those Soviets. He bankrupted them. I mean, I know that I don't think that was his goal, but that's what ended up happening. Mm-hmm. They tried and tried. They were the Soviets were deathly afraid of Ronald Reagan. Did you know that?
No. Well, no, I guess not.
Like, they really thought that dude would push the button anytime. They were terrified of him. And when he spent so much money on, you know, getting the United States military just like huge and modern and realistically, he put us 20 years ahead of the rest of the world with that. And it did create a dominant United States military machine that is still unrivaled. Although, you know, there's questionability about, there's a whole other discussion about what our force readiness is now. But he did bank, I mean, generally speaking, from what I've read and what I agree with what I've read and what I've read things I don't agree with, and generally speaking, I would agree with the theory that, you know, he bankrupted the Soviets into just kind of collapsing. By the time the wall came down, I have friends that were there in East Berlin or West Berlin when the wall came down, and they, you know, military friends, the guys I served with, and they told me they got an opportunity to go across, and the planes on, you know, there were like, you know, screws, bolts missing off the planes and flat tires on some of the vehicles, and they just, you know, they weren't able to support it anymore. Mm. Which I think, if you think about the people of Russia, the Soviet Union at the time, and, you know, like I think it was the last episode we talked about how sad it was to me that they never really had a democracy. Mm-hmm. Or if they did, it was just this flash of democracy before it was all sold off to the rich gangsters.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the military people that had money at the fall of the Soviet Union. But, you know, I mean, that was just more, I mean, like how, I mean, those people were already waiting in line for bread. How awful must it have been towards the end? That poor country.
Yeah. Yeah. Russia is a heartbreaking story.
It really is too, and a proud fine people, you know. It's I if they had a better government, I would hope for them to find things in Siberia, but they don't, so I don't. Because I would hate to see what a true powerhouse Russia today would be. It would be bad for the world, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I've always like, when I was a kid, a friend of mine, you know, went to a different school, and he described this kid that was in his school, and he was like, "Nobody messes with this kid. This kid is a nightmare, and he's half the size of everybody else, but he spits and he bites, and he tears and he gouges at the slightest provocation, and nobody messes with that kid." And that kid isn't necessarily tougher or stronger than the other kids, but just nobody wants to get into it with him. And unfortunately, I think like Russia's government has a history of being that to a degree.
Do you know what you just described to the childhood you just described?
What?
Joseph Djugashvili, otherwise known as Stalin.
That's interesting.
That's exactly how he was as a child. He was that
Wow.
kid.
Yeah. That's interesting. I wouldn't have known that.
Yeah, his mom sent him to seminary. She wanted him to be a, I don't know, whatever, a priest, I guess. I don't know exactly what they called him in the Eastern Orthodox Church. But she wanted him to be a priest, and he was that kid at seminary. And he, organized a gang of his own kids so that he had to, so that he could stop spitting and fighting, and you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, like when you look at like what Russia has achieved in a negative sense in the last sort of few years, talk about punching above your weight.
Hey,
And
you
not
got to
in a
give
good
a
way.
pro. Well, it's Putin, man. I mean, the guy's ruthless. I mean, he knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly where to punch somebody bigger than him. He's brilliant. I mean, he really is. I got to give him props. He's brilliant.
Yeah.
He turned that country into a nobody even knew who he was. He was just some freaking interpreter. He was a handler for a little while, actually.
He was there,
A
wasn't he,
spy
when the wall
handler.
came down? He was
Yeah, he was there, yeah.
stationed, and he had to bluff because people were storming the barracks, and he had to bluff that they had much more firepower than they had.
I didn't
I
know
find,
that.
yeah, I find that an interesting tidbit about Putin, that
That
you
is an
know
interesting tidbit.
he was in this desperate situation and kind of bluffed himself out. And what did he take away from that, you know?
Oh boy, that's a good point. That's a good one. Boy, that explains some behavior, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, fuck Ronald Reagan and give me 1.5 minutes on Ronald Reagan in the 50s and the House Un-American Activities Commission.
Oh, you mean how Ronnie liked to sell out all his friends that he was actually in business rivalries with or professional rivalries with?
How he
Certain
actually
people?
turned the FBI onto specific people that he had a problem with for one reason or another.
Yeah, specific, like personal problems with. They weren't even, communists or whatever. He just sold them right out because he didn't like them.
Because I always like that little tidbit about him, because for me, that's, I mean, okay, look, he did awful, huge, massive scale things, but that's like, oh, that's an evil man.
That's a measure of character right there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. I'm glad you brought that up. I'd forgotten that. Yeah. I mean, Saint Reagan. Woohoo!
Yeah.
You know?
Just what a
Way to
nasty.
lead a party, buddy.
Do you know the word schlieving?
No.
It's an Irish word, and it means like a sneaky, nasty, slimy person
I'm stealing that.
that you can't trust. And what, like when I think of a schlieving, oh, what a perfect example is like Ronnie in the 50s.
Leaving ING.
Well, it's pronounced, it's spelt, I think, Sleibhi fada n, but it's pronounced as if it was spelt Sleeveen.
Sleeving.
Yeah,
Sleeving.
Schlieving, basically,
I
or
love it. It feels like
Sleeveen.
something. Yeah, it sounds ancient. Like maybe they would have named a forest sprite that or something, you know?
Yeah, that's that kind of it. Has that kind of quality because so many of those words come from Gaelic Irish. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Schlieving. I'm not going to forget that.
Yeah.
I have to learn how to spell it, though. You'll have to send it to me.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah,
Once
because
I've
that seems like a
confirmed
good
for
one.
myself, because my Irish is disastrous and we're not going to talk about that.
Oh, we break stereotypes, brother. That's what we do for a living. I'm kidding. We're both very odd people who like to talk about odd things. Yeah, fuck Reagan, man, for sure. I'm really glad we talked about that, actually.
Yeah, I
Just
enjoyed it.
a myth.
He's always like he's on my list of like, because I hate him for a million reasons, right? But one of the big reasons I hate him is how misty-eyed people are about him, and how when someone like Donald Trump is doing all these terrible things, people that aren't morons, seemingly, are saying, you know, it's a, look at how the party of Reagan has fallen, or that kind of stuff. Like, no.
It hasn't fallen. It was always there. It just wasn't out in the open.
Yeah. Trump is
It's
just a sloppy, shirt tails hanging out, mustard on his tie, Reagan, you know?
I guess that kind of makes sense. If you're gonna fall all the way down, you might as well fall to the guy who's the worst version of the one you love the most, huh?
All right,
What?
that's
It was
perfect.
You made me think of something. There was an incident. Oh, I know what it was. It was during the Bush administration. Something came out, and everybody was all shocked that they had done something with a drone. Oh, I know what it was. It was the first WikiLeaks. It was the first big WikiLeaks. They had it was a capture of an Apache helicopter, not friendly firing, but just taking out some civilians, you know. And
Yeah.
I don't know if it was blatant or not. I don't know if it was purposeful. I think that maybe it was. I think maybe there was audio of those pilots, but I'm not sure. But I know that my first reaction wasn't, "Oh, look, army guys are killing civilians." My first reaction was, "Yeah, I was really stupid to let people know that."
Wow.
And I think
Yeah.
that's where we're at with the Republicans now.
Yeah.
Is that they've always been doing this. They just weren't stupid enough to let everybody know. Apparently now they are, because Donald Trump loves to say what he's doing out loud.
I mean, I mean, yeah, I think it's funny. I think we almost have to have like a little rule that we don't really talk about Trump on this show, just because every episode would just be that, right? And it would be
Well, I
the
can't be that.
outrages
We
that we'd
can't be.
seen not this week, but in the 10 minutes before we started the episode.
Maybe we should get it out of our systems. Yeah, I think that's a good call.
We could
Just
do one
bitching each other
episode.
about the stupidity of that man for 20 minutes.
Yeah, we could do like, do you want to do like maybe in the next few weeks we can do like one episode? Maybe we could try and come at it from an angle, like hit a few things that don't normally get discussed. That might be a fun episode, actually.
What doesn't get discussed with that man?
Yeah, there are bits and pieces that don't come up that much, or that just get, you know, they get mentioned and then they're sort of forgotten or ignored, you know.
Well, a lot of that man's strategy is distraction. There are
Sure.
things that go, I mean, there are some deregulations that's been going on that people aren't talking about that the mainstream news never talks about because it's not a horse race. They consider it boring.
Yeah.
But there is a lot that goes on in the administration driven by, I don't know who, I'm assuming probably Pence, because it's way too policy wonky for an idiot like Trump. That goes on like on a weekly basis, you know. Political has a really good section this week. What you missed in Trump land this week, or
Oh,
something
that's
like that.
cool. Yeah.
And it's absolutely the policies that have gone through of the administration for the week.
I mean, it is hard to focus on the thought, oh shit, someone keyed my car today, when you get home and your house is on fire.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it's about. Yeah, that's a good call.
Right,
All right,
man.
well, no Trump. We should end this anyway. We've been
Yeah,
blabbing now.
it's a good one. It's been a good one.
I think so.
Do you want to? One thing that I think we haven't mentioned this episode actually is fuck Ronald Reagan.
Fuck Ronald Reagan, man.
Yeah.
You know, just fuck him and his shitty little ears.
There we go. All right. Good night, folks.
Good night.
Good stuff, man.
That was a good one.